And we're holding on page Nun Ches in Sukkah, Ois Membeis. The Mishnah had said that during Simchas Beis Sha'eva, the Levim would be standing on the steps leading down, the 15 steps leading down from Sha'ar Nikanor to from Ezra Sisirol to Ezra Noshim, and they would be singing and playing the 15 Shir HaMaalos. So the Gemara says, Omer Rav Chisda Hu Mirabbanan. So Rav Chisda asks one of the Chachamim, Da'ava Misader Agad Tekameh. This Hahumer Abonim, this Talmud Chacham used to regularly arrange and teach Agadta in front of Rav Chisda. So he would be doing like we're doing now, learning, saying out things from Agadta, and then they would discuss them in the Beis Medrash. So he asks him, Mishmiel Ochani Tesvov Shir HaMaalos Kenegad Mi Omron David. Have you heard anything about corresponding to what did David say these 15 Shir HaMaalos? Why Davka 15, and why are they called Shir HaMaalos? Omale. So he tells him, "Hachi Omer Rabbi Yechanan." This is what Rabbi Yechanan said. "B'shar shekora David shittin," when David was digging the shittin of the Beis Hamikdash. Now we learned in the previous parak, you have the shittin, whatever, are the holes, is the cavity under the mizbeach where the wine and the water that they poured on the mizbeach went down into that, went all the way down to the tahoim, to the underground depths. So when David was digging them, so now Rashi points out in the previous parak we learned that those were created from Sheshes and Bereshis. So either our Gemara disagrees with that, or it says, okay, Hashem created them at Ma'aseh Bereshis, but over the thousands of years until David comes along, they had gotten stocked up with dirt and whatever, and now David has to redig them. Tosfos discusses over there that maybe not necessarily. Maybe the Shisim that we're talking about over here is not the cavities that we're talking about into which the wine and water went, but rather the foundations of the Heichal. So those weren't created from Sheshes and Bereshis. So in that case, David is digging them now. anyway, so when he was digging them, Kofa Tahoima, the Tahoim, the underground waters started swelling up. Started floating and swelling upward. The Iboil Mishtafela Alma, and they were going to flood the world. Omer David Tesvav Milas, so David says the 15 Shir HaMaalos, Va'achse, and caused it to go back down. So therefore, 15 Shir HaMaalos, because as the Gemara is going to point out, in the continuation of the story, he took it down 15,000 amos. So Rav Chisda asked me, Hochi Tesvav Milas, then why are they called Shir HaMaalos? Yodas mi barley, they should be called the 15 songs of descents, because he's using it to cause the water to descend, to go back down. On Malay, so
what
that
purpose he dug for Shisin?
So that's the thing. Either the Shisin means, because we know that David did everything he could to prepare for the building of the Beis Mikdash. So this would be part of that preparation. Either again that he's digging the cavities into which the wine and the water flows down when it's poured off the Mizbeach, when it's poured on the Mizbeach, or as Tosfos says over there, the foundations of the Heichal, because David is doing everything he can to prepare for the building of the Beis Mikdash. Says to Rav Chisda, actually, now that you reminded me with that question, Hochi Itmar, then now I remember how it was said. It went like this: B'shor shekorah David shisin, when David was digging the shisin, Kofa Tahoim, again the Tahoim swelled up, or boil the Mishtafei la'alma, and was going to flood the world. Now Rashi brings over here that actually let's learn the next line, and then we'll talk about what Rashi and Marsha say about it. Omer David, mi ikka de yoda. Is there anybody who knows the answer? De shori the michtav shema chaspa, that we should be allowed to write a name of Hashem on a piece of earthenware or mishtabe and throw it down into the water, la chuse the duchte, to make it go back down into its place, oloi or not. Or the Girsa in the printed Gemara is just more simply than a shadiya b'tahoma, to throw it down into the tahoma in the depths, or manach, and then it'll calm it down. Now, why does he want to use a piece of earthenware? Rashi brings from a medrash on Sefer Shmuel that says that actually, when David was digging, he found this piece of earthenware there, and he picked it up, and that was actually the plug that was keeping the tahoim, that was keeping the water of the tahoim underground. So he pulled out the plug, and the water started coming up. Maharsha brings over here from the Yerushalmi and Sanhedrin, tells the story and calls it an otzitz. An otzitz is usually like a flower pot, like an earthenware container in which he plant grain or flowers or what have you. So then in that case, he found that and he picked it up. And again, so now he wants to know whether you can write Hashem's name on it and put it back, and that will keep, and that will cause the Tehoim to go back down, because it'll respect the Tehoim. The water there will respect Hashem's name and then go away. The question is, though, that it's going to involve erasing Hashem's name. So are you allowed to do that? Orochoneu deals with the question, and a couple of other Mephoshim deal with the question. What's the question? Don't we know Pekuach Nefesh is Doicha Kolam Torah Kola? So Orochoneu gives an answer. He says that the question was more over here. It's a matter of Chil Hashem. After all, it involves erasing Hashem's name. So would it be mutter? Would it be osir? Or maybe it would be mutter because you're not directly erasing it. It's only a grammar. You're indirectly causing that it's going to end up getting erased. And this Gemara is also brought in Marcus. The Aruch HaNeo gives a different answer, the gist of which that it wasn't necessarily going to actually literally flood the entire world. Hashem promised he's never going to bring a marble again. So it wasn't necessarily such a matter of Pekuach Nefesh, but just it would be a discomfort for the whole world because there'd be enough flooding to cause trouble. So therefore, he wasn't sure whether it's something that bad.
Why can't we say that these aqueducts were always there?
That's what Rashi says. One possibility. They were there since Shachis and Abedatius, but now David had to redig them because they had gotten stopped up. Yeah. And he opened up too much, and yeah. So actually, the one version of the Medrash that tells the story is that when he finds this plug over there, he finds this piece of earthenware, so he figures, okay, listen, I need to keep on digging. I need to get all the way down to the Tehoim. And the piece of earthenware itself actually starts talking to him and says, don't, Hashem put me here at Maisa. But actually, it says in that version, it says that Marshall brings it partially over here, that ever since when Hashem was about to give the Torah, the whole world was trembling, not knowing if the Jewish people are going to accept the Torah, and then the water then threatened to flood the earth, and Hashem put me over there, says this piece of earthenware, as the plug to keep things in place, and David ignored it and picked it up anyway, and the result is what we're saying over here. Marshall gives a long explanation of it. The gist of it is that this was almost like a recapitulation of what happened when Hashem first created the world. V'derech ha-teva, water ought to cover the earth. Water is lighter than earth, and the whole world should be covered with water. And that's how it was when Hashem first created the world. But then the Eibishter said that the water has to go in its appropriate places.
That's why we say
Rakara Talmoyim, indeed, yeah. So now the Nisuch HaMayim, which again goes down into these Shisin, all has to do with that. The Gemara in Tainus mentions, and Marsha brought it earlier in the Masechta, that Nisuch HaMayim is meant to evoke that the Mei Tehoim, that this water should come up and moisturize the ground from underneath together, and that together with the rainfall from above will make for bountiful large crops. So now you had, there's almost like a recreation of that the world is threatening to flood again until Hashem is going to tell it to go back, which would be represented by putting the Hashem's name on the piece of earthenware and put it in there. But David isn't sure whether he should do that. There is, in fact, an explanation building kind of on what Marsha is saying over here that you have really. So each of those things was almost like another example of the world being recreated. When Hashem first created the world by Matan Torah, whereas we know the world was created only on condition that the Jewish people accepted the Torah. So therefore you had then now like the same kind of thing happen again with the water about to flood the world and then Hashem telling it to go back down. And now when the Bais Mikdash, which is a miniature world, was about to be built, then you have the same thing a third time. Anyway, so David's not sure. Leka to Omalei Midi, and no one was saying anything. Now David himself, actually, Rashi points out, his Rebbe Achitofel was there. Therefore, he didn't want to say the answer because he didn't want to be murder halacha b'fnei Rabbi. Omad David Hayadea Loima Ve'ene Omer. Anybody who knows the answer and doesn't say it, Yechonik B'Groinai will deserve to be strangled by the neck and killed that way. Kind of midah k'negen midah. He's causing that the whole world is going to be flooded and everybody's going to drown and be unable to breathe. So therefore, he deserves that punishment. Nosa Achitofel Kavachoyim Ba'atzmoy. So that motivated Achitofel to do something about it. So he reasoned by a Kavachoyim. to make peace between a husband and wife. Hashem says that my name that was written in Kedusha should be erased on the water. As we know, we erase the Parsha Sota over there, which includes Hashem's name a couple of times. How much more so to make shalom between the whole world and Hashem? So he tells David it's mutu to do it. Why he didn't want to speak up in the first place, the Aruch Haner gives an explanation, because given that the question over here turns on the question of grammar, David himself is the whole issue with Bathsheba and Uriah and all was a matter of grammar as well. So if David says you're allowed to, then people are going to say, hey, you know why he's saying grammar is mutter? Because that helps him himself. So Achitofel, not being a friend of David exactly, he eventually turned on him because of that and joined Avshalom's revolt. So he didn't want to at first speak up. Only when David made this threat, then he figured he has no choice to speak up. So he said it's mutter. So the answer is, that's the answer. You could write a name of Hashem on there and do that, because we see the Kal v'Chomer from the Sota. No, so wait, so we haven't gotten to that point yet. He's telling the whole story. We're still going to get to that. Wait. Marsha, by the way, points out, you see in some of the Shira Malas, you have psukim that represent this whole story. You have in particular in Kapitel Kochav Dalad, on this Azaya Mayim Shtofunu, the water would have flooded us, Nachla Ovar Anafshenu, Ezreinu B'Shem Hashem, Oysa Shemayim Ba'oretz. Why B'Shem Hashem? Why not Ezreinu B'Shem? Because they were saved through the name of Hashem that's going to be written over there. It's only one of 15, but still we see among the Shira Malas, we see this. You have other Shamalas that also talk about Hashem saving us from different troubles, but yeah, Marshall focuses on this particular one. So cost of Shema Chaspa, so David wrote the name of Hashem on that piece of earthenware, Shodi Ben, he threw it down. Nochis Tahoim Shitzer Alfi Gamidi, and the water of the Tahoim receded and went 16,000 amas down. Kiven to Chosid Nochis Tuba, but now David saw it had gone too far down. That's too far. Omer, he thinks to himself, it's better that the water of the Tahoim, that the underground aquifers should be closer, should be higher up and closer to the surface, Mirtav Alma. That way the world will be more moisturized and the crops will grow better. Omer, Tesvav Milas, so now he said the 15 Shira Milas, but Aske Chameser Alfi Gamidi. And with that, he brought it up 15,000 Amas. So that's why they're Shira Milas, because each one brought it up another 1,000 Amas. So he kept it. Now it's going to be one, the top of the water table over there is going to be 1,000 amos underground. You see from that, sumcha da'ara, the thickness of the earth below which you have the water. Yeah, reka eretz almoyim, alfe gamidi is 1,000 amos. So the Gemara asks, yet we see that many times you can dig a lot less than 1,000 amas and you get water. Where is that water coming from? Those come from the ladders of the Pras River, meaning Rashi explains, the Pras starts flowing from very high mountains. The source of it is mountains in Turkey. So now we know when you have water that begins at a high place and then flows downhill, then you can get it. Water pressure will allow it to go up to the height that it came from and no more. This is why in small towns you have water towers. Why is the water tower in these little hick towns always the tallest building in the whole vicinity? Because that way you have water pressure throughout the town. So in the same way over here, if the Prus begins at mountains that are several thousand amas above sea level, however many feet they are above sea level, then that allows the water that flows down from it can flow underground. There can be underground tunnels and things through which the water will rise until it reaches fairly close to the surface. So the actual Tahoim itself, we're saying, is 1,000 amas underground, but you have places where you have these underground aquifers that are fed from the Prus that go through these tunnels underground and they're able to reach all the way to the height of the mountains from which the Prus springs, and that's a lot closer. That will often be a lot closer than 1,000 amas to the surface. Now Rashi and all the other Mephoshim after him deal with a big problem, which is that, so we're saying over here that Achitofel played over, so actually not over here, but in Makkos, this Gemara, this story is also told, Rashi over there mentions there seems to be a major problem with the chronology of the story. We're saying that Achitofel was the one who gave David this advice of what to do when he was digging the shisim. The problem with that is, where are the shisim? In the location of the Bais Mikdash. When did David buy the location of the Bais Mikdash? Goran and Avna Hayavusi was in the last year of his reign, the 40th year of his reign. That was a few years after Avshalom's revolt. And by that time, Achitofel was dead because he had joined Avshalom's revolt. He was his chief advisor. And then when he realized that the revolt is going to fail and David is going to win, then he realized he's going to be judged as a murdered by Malchus. So the Pasuk says he went home and committed suicide. He hanged himself, which is, by the way, David had said that whoever doesn't tell the answer, Yechonik Begrunai, this is an example. The Gemara says, Kill Las Chocham, Afil Al Tnai Hibo, even though it was Al Tnai, if he doesn't say, and the fact is he did say, nevertheless, he ended up Yechonik Begrunai. And why he said it in that way, I guess because he figured he needs to motivate that whoever it is actually going to speak up, and a bracha may not be enough motivation, but then, I don't know. It's a good question. Be that as it may, the point is that Rashi points out over there in Makkos. So the problem is, by the time David bought Goran Arav Nahivusi is 3 or 4 years after Achitofel is dead already. So how is he over here giving David advice what to do? So Rashi explains over there that maybe what it is David knew long before that this is going to be the site of the Bais Mikdash. Only at that time is when he bought it. After the whole story with where he tried to count the Jewish people, and then there was a Magefa and so on, and then Hashem told him to go build him his Beach over there, and the Magefa was stopped, that was stopped. That's when he actually bought the property. But years before that, Rashi explains over there, he knew that is where the Bais Mikdash is going to be, and therefore he made arrangements to dig the Shisin over there. That's Rashi. Marsha has some trouble with that. The problem is, it seems from the Psukim that he actually didn't know up until that point that this is the site of the Bais Mikdash. He only discovered that now when Hashem told him to go there and build the Mizbeach. And how is he getting permission from Aravna to dig over there? And we see that he didn't even want to. When Aravna offered him the spot for free and the animals for carbon and the wood for firewood or whatever, he didn't want to, and he insisted on paying for it. And all of a sudden, we're saying he was going and digging shisin over there without where long before that. So Marsha explains that no, actually, what it is that the Gemara tells us in Zvachim that David and Shmuel researched where exactly the Bais Mikdash is supposed to be located. They researched using the Psukim and Sefer Yoshua. They eventually figured out the highest point in that part of Eretz Yisrael is Ein Etam. There's a spring called Ein Etam. And they thought that's where the Bais Mikdash should be built. Then afterwards, the Gemara says, they realized it shouldn't actually be there based on the Pasuk. Bank Sefer of Shochin, it should be a little bit lower than that, just as the shoulders are a little bit lower than the head. So they realized it has to be on Har HaMoriah. So therefore, Samar Shah says the vote, what? Ein Etam is a spring, Some say it's near, Chevron, some say it's on the but there's a place mentioned in Sefer Yoshua on the borders of Yehuda and Binyamin called Mayan Meneftoyach. You have nowadays there's an area of extended Yerushalayim nowadays called there was an Arab village there called Lifta. I'm not sure what they call it now. Yes, I remember that's Mayan Meneftoyach. So it would be someplace near someplace in the new city of Yerushalayim nowadays. Some say that's actually near Hebron, whatever. Anyway, the point is the Gemara mentions in Yuma that's 23 and a fraction amos higher in elevation than the Harabais. So therefore, Marsha says the vote is David thought that's where the Bais Mikdash is going to be. Therefore, he went and dug the shis in there. No problem. Aravna doesn't own that area. Either it was open land that anybody could dig, or if it was somebody's land, then David arranged for permission. And that's when this whole story happened, that the Tehoim came and threatened to flood the world. Meanwhile, as it turns out, he was digging in the wrong place. So that's how Marsha explains it. And he points out also, especially given what Tosfos is saying, that David wasn't digging the Shisin per se at all, but rather the foundations of the Bais Mikdash. Well, we find in the event, Shlomo is the one who laid the foundations of the Bais Mikdash, not David. So therefore, it turns out that Bechlal David had been working in the wrong place. The Aruch HaNer and Ben Yehoyada and different other Mephoshim talk about different other possibilities and angles on it. They work to justify what Rashi is saying, that David knew all along that this is going to be the site of the Bais Mikdash. That maybe he knew that this is going to be the site, but maybe not the exact location of the Mizbeach, for example, or different other possibilities that they discuss how it could be that David was doing this back when Achitofel was alive. Further on, the Gemara talks about at one point it's dealing with the Mishnah talks about the tkiyas that they would blow in the Bais Hamikdash during the various parts of the Avodah, and it talks about how they would blow during the Shir Shoyim, and that leads the Gemara into a discussion of the Shir Shoyim on each of the days of Chol HaMoed Sukkos. Now the Gemara is only mentioning the days of Chol HaMoed; it doesn't mention the days of Yom Tov. The Aruch HaNer suggests, based on Masech HaSofrim, that maybe on the first day Yom Tov they sang Kapitel Ein Vav, Noda B'Yehuda Elikim, because it has the pasuk in it, Vayhi V'Shalim Sukkoi. But anyway, here the Gemara is dealing with what they did on Chol HaMoed. Barishin Mahu Omer, on the first day of Chol HaMoed, the Shir Shoyim that they would play, that they would sing, is Hovu LaHashem B'nei Elim, Kapitel Chof Tes of Tilim, because Rashi says it connects with Simchas Beis HaSheva. So therefore it has to do with Simchas Beis HaSheva and with the Nisach HaMayim. Basheni Mahu Omer, Marshop points out also that capital has seven times in it the word koil. So that represents 7 days of Sukkos. Basheni Mahu Omer, the second day Chol HaMoed, the capital that they would sing was capital Nun V'la Rosha Omer Lekim. Why that part? Rashi explains that whole capital is telling people you're coming to rejoice on the Yom Tov and to win korbanos and the Lord Rosh Omer Lekim Malachol Asapur Chukai. Hashem says to the Rosh, what do you need to talk about my chukim and my mitzvahs and who needs your korbanos unless you're going to have the right motivation for Hashem. And it finishes off Zeveach Todi Chabdonini, a person who brings a voluntary korban toda honors Hashem. So that shows, in other words, that Hashem. That reminds people, Bal Ta'achar, the deadline for Bal Ta'achar is coming up soon. You have to bring all the korbanos that you said you're going to bring. So the whole capital talks about, most of that capital talks about these concepts, and therefore is an appropriate thing for Chol HaMoed Sukkos. The Gimel Mahu Emer, on the third day, the capital they would sing is the second half of capital Tzadik Dalad, Mi Yokum Li Mirein. So that talks about how Hashem saves us from, we ask, Mi Yokum Li Mireyim, who's going to stand up together with me against the ones who would want to harm me. And it goes on to talk about how Hashem saves them from them. The Kimat, we call Lul Hashem Azrosali, Kimat Shochna Duma Nafshi, Yatzmisim Hashem Alekenu, and all that. Rashi explains that part of the capital is talking about all the troubles that we have from the goyim who harass us. Now, in the time of the second Bais HaMikdash, which is when this Braisa was composed, the most of the time of the second Bais HaMikdash, they're being ruled over by the Persians and the Greeks and the Romans. And nevertheless, we still are besimcha, and we still come to the Bais HaMikdash and have besimcha over there. So therefore, we do that half of the capital in order to represent that point. Marsha also explains, as far as the second one, Marsha explains also the next piece of the Gemara is going to point out that you have the Gemara is going to point out how during Sukkos we bring korbanos on behalf of the nations of the world, and they didn't even realize it. So we're doing Kapitel Nun, like Ekach Mibes Chapar, that Hashem is saying, I don't need your korbanos. I'm accepting them because I love you and I want to show how precious you Jewish people are to me. That's in Kapitel Nun. And then the second half of Tzadik Dalet is saying, V'lo Rosha Omer Lekim, Hashem is speaking to the Rishoyim who ended up destroying the Bais HaMikdash, who needs a Malachol, Hashem is saying, V'lo Rosha Omer Lekim, Malachol Asapur Chukai, and you yourself destroyed it and ruined it. So therefore that capital, and then the second half of Tzadik Dalet, which again talks about the Rishoyim who harass us and how Hashem saves us from them. The next one, B'dalad Mahu Emer Binu Boyerim Ba'am, the fourth day Chol HaMoed Sukkos, they would do the first half of Kapitel Tzadik Dalad, which has the pasuk Binu Boyerim Ba'am. You should realize, you should understand, today's Wednesday, actually, it was today's Shir Shoyim. You foolish people among the people, you should understand, you should realize, and that means, in other words, that you should realize, in particular, Rashi says, it's coming towards the end of Sukkos. It's the time to be giving you Matnas Aniyim. It's the time for you to be separating your Truma and Meiser and anything else that you haven't given the poor people and Meiser Oni and everything. So, and you're going to think, oh, who's going to know if I don't? Hashem is watching. Hanoita Ozen Ola Yishmaim, Yitzayin Ola Yabit, etc. And therefore, we do that part. Behei Mahu Omer, on the fifth day Chol HaMoed Sukkos, what would they say? Hasiyos Misevel Shichmoy Kapo Vegomer, Kapitel Pei Aleph, which is usually the Shir Shoyim for Thursday. This is Rashi explains these are all words of Tanchumin, that first of all, of Chonchal Mei Meriva Sela has to do again with the water that were judged on during Sukkos, the Bachag Nidonin Alamoyim, and it's also that Hashem is saying that I will save you and I provide for everything you need. Anochi Hashem Alekecha Hamalchom Eretz Mitzrayim, and Vayachil Mechel of Chitra, Hashem is promising all the good over there, that I'll save you from your troubles and give you all kinds of good. The Vav Mahu Emer, and then on the sixth day, which is Hashan and Abba, the capital that they would do was Yumotu Komos Deor, that's capital Pei Beis, which is the Shir Shoyam for Tuesday, which has in it Pasuk Yumotu Komos Deor. Rashi explains that again, that capital, one thing, it's so Oni Varosh Hatzdiku, refers to make sure to give your Meiser to the Aniyim. And if a person doesn't, then Hashem punishes them with death, as we have in Pirkei Avos, so therefore it was the last opportunity to remind them, you're getting ready to go home after Sukkos, after spending a Sukkos in the Beis Mikdash, make sure you give your Matnas Aniyim the way you're supposed to. So it comes out basically of these kapitlach, some of them have to do with the simcha of Sukkos, some of them have to do with warning people and reminding people about giving their matnas aniyim, and then each one has some theme that's appropriate to Sukkos. V'imchal Shabbos liyos ve'echad mehem. If Shabbos comes out on one of the days of Chol HaMoed, then what we do is on Shabbos instead they do the Shir Shor Yom of Shabbos, so everything gets moved one day later. So in other words, if the first day Chol HaMoed Sukkos was Shabbos, for example, then instead of Hovu LaHashem B'nei Elim, they're doing Shir Shor Yom of Shabbos. The second day, then they're doing Hovu LaHashem B'nei Elim. The third day, they're doing V'lo Rosh HaAmalekim, and so on and so forth. And therefore, so Yimotu Nidcha, so the last one Yimotu gets pushed off because there's no room for it. And the Gemara talks about there are two different opinions what the exact order was, but the point is that we had these kapitlach. Each of the days of Sukkos, the Aruch HaNer discusses, does it actually mean, and then Ben Yehoyada discussed, does it actually mean that each time they did the whole capital and except for the third and fourth days where we said they did only half of capital Tzadik Dalet, or is it that each time they only did from the Pasuk that the Gemara is quoting and onward? The Aruch HaNer makes it a machlokes between Rashi and Tosfos. Ben Yehoyada says maybe what it was is the up until that pasuk that the Gemara is quoting, they would do that would be the low part of the song. Then you get to the high part, the crescendo of the song would be at the pasuk that the Gemara is quoting from each one. Okay. The Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Elazar, hani ayin parim k'neged mi. We have 70 bulls that are brought as korbanos during the 7 days of Sukkos. As we know, you have 13 the first day and 12 the second day and so forth. What does that correspond to? Connected ayin umas. Those correspond to the 70 nations. Pau yichidi lama. Then why do you have one individual power at the end? Kenegad Uma Yechida on Shmini Atzeres, you have only one power. Kenegad Uma Yechida, representing the unique nation of the Jewish people. So it's like a human king who tells his servants, make for me a big party. On the last day, he says to his dear friend, Aseli Sudaktana, make for me one small sudak so I can have a personal hana from you. So in other words, Rashi says, he's saying, I don't really get that much hana out of all of these other people who were participating in all the parties all these other days. Now I want my alone time with you. You're the one I enjoy my time with.
Interesting, like, so, they are after us, and we're praying for them.
And we're davening for them. Yeah, the Gemara mentions, the Medrash mentions in this connection, you have the Pasuk, Tachas Avosi Stununi Vanis Tzfila. We say, we daven on their behalf. We bring Karbonis on their behalf. And what do they repay us with? The Stununi that they hate us. So yeah, that's, So Mar Shah points out, of course, we have the famous Medrash that says that each day they're less and less, representing that the evil of these nations gets less and less as time goes on, and their star eventually falls, and therefore, so you have that point. Rav Shamshon of Fol Hirsch makes a very interesting point on it in his Pirush on Chumash. He says, so you start off with, you have on the first day of 13 bulls and 14 sheep. Now, usually on most Yom Tovim, you have seven bulls and you have seven sheep. So now you have almost double the bulls and exactly double the sheep. So he says that represents, in other words, that you have the Jews and you have the Goyim, two different groups in the world. when it comes to being sheep and following Hashem loyally, then they were saying everybody has to do that equally. Therefore, we have seven for us and seven for them, each of the 7 days of Sukkot. When it comes to bulls, which represents leadership, which represent independence, then we have our seven. They start out with six, then five, then four, etc., going down to zero on Hashanah Rabbah, representing that the sense of independence that they have, that the sense of independence that they have from Elokus should become less and less until they realize that Einod Milvado. So Amar Rav Yechanan, Oylahem lo'ovid kachavim sha'avdu ve'eni yodin ma sha'avdu. Woe to the goyim that they lost something and they don't even know what they lost. Bizman she'beis mikdash kaim, mizbeach mechaper aleihem. When the beis mikdash is standing, the mizbeach with these karbonos is mechaper for them. Va'achshav mi mechaper aleihem. Now, who can be mechaper for them when they themselves went and destroyed the beis mikdash? And Maharsha says, again, that some of the kapitlach that they sang during Sukkot are hinting at that idea. What do you think you're doing? You yourselves are going and destroying the Beis Mikdash. How? What makes you think? You don't even realize how much you were benefiting from it. Maharsha says also, this is what we mean when we have in Eishes Chayil, you have Batischak, Yoim Achron, the Yoim Achron representing Shmini Atzeres. We're happy because we have our alone time with Hashem of Shmini Atzeres, and the Parach of Ayelechon representing the one nation of the Jewish people. You have also the Zohar has the expression on it that Simchas Torah, that Shmini Atzeres and Simchas Torah is Yisrael Malko B'chodoy. It's Hashem, Yisrael and the king are alone together based on this Gemara over here. Okay, at the end of the Masechta, it talks about the famous thing about so usually you have the Mishmar, you have the 24 Mishmaris of Koyanim, each one would serve for a week in the Beis Mikdash, and they had when they would switch on Shabbos, the outgoing Mishmar would do the Avodah Shabbos morning, and then the incoming Mishmar would do the Avodah Shabbos afternoon. And the Mishnah mentions that usually when it came to dividing the Lechem Aponim, the incoming and the outgoing Mishmar each get part of the Lechem Aponim, and the ones who are incoming usually divided in the north part of the Azara, because that's the more important part, because that's where the Kodesh Kodesh Mashiach did, and the outgoing ones divided in the south part. Then the Mishnah mentions that the Mishmar of Bilga, which is the 15th Mishmar, each Mishmar was named for an ancestor of theirs, so their ancestor was named Bilga. That's why they're called Mishmar of Bilga. They always got their lechem upon him in the south side of the Azara, as if like they were always leaving. And two other things also the Mishnah mentions, that their ring that was used for shechting the korbanos was permanently disabled, was permanently closed up, and their cubby that was used for their knives was permanently closed. So why is that? The Gemara says, Tanan Abanan, Maisa Miriam Bas Bilga. It happened with Miriam Bas Bilga. And it doesn't mean Bas Bilga, it doesn't mean her father's name was Bilga. It means that she's a daughter from the family of Bilga, from this Mishmar. Shehi Mira Dosa, she shmadzich, Bahocha Benisis, La Saudiat Echon, Mimalcha Yavonim. And she went and married a soldier who served one of the Greek kings. When the Greeks came into the Hegel in the years before the Nes Chanukah, she was kicking the Mizbeach with her sandal, the Umrah, and she called out, Lukus, Lukus, wolf, wolf. Lukus is the Greek word for wolf. How long are you going to be destroying and using up the money of the Jewish people by eating and consuming the korbanos? And you're not standing up for them in their time of trouble. So it was a chutzpahdika thing to say. When the Chacham heard about it, Kavos Tabata, they permanently closed their ring of the 24 rings, the Sos was Chalona, and they closed up her window. So, which, as the Gemara is going to explain soon, because the Chachamim realized that the way that for her to be able to say such a thing means that her parents, and to a certain extent, the whole Mishmar is at fault over here for having such a reaction. We know, of course, there are the famous sichas. Relax. The Rebbe famously talked about this in a hadron that he made on Vav Tishrei 1 year, Tavshin Lamed Hey, and the Rebbe was crying about it. And you can hear the audio of it. You can see the video of it. Lukus, yeah, and then talking about that, after all, is as much as the Gemara is saying over here, she acted in such a chutzpahdika way, and for that whole Mishmar was penalized. Nonetheless, you see in it the fact that is that even though she had fallen so low, she's a Mishumedes, she's married to a Goy, nevertheless, what's most on her mind is the troubles of the Jewish people. So it's a limud chutzpah. Then so the Rebbe talked about that at some length over there and cried about it. Then the Rebbe followed it up on Simchas Torah that year with a follow up sicha talking about it further. He said, people are asking, you have to be melamed chutzpah on such a person. Where does such a thing come from? And the Rebbe talked about over there, Alderich, like you have a famous story. You mentioned the story involving the Alter Rebbe, where there was a fellow in the Alter Rebbe's time who had a dibuk, who had a neshama that had gotten improperly attached to him, and it was causing him trouble. And it turned out this neshama was one of the people who had killed Zechariah Hanovi back in the time of the first Beis Mikdash, and the Alter Rebbe was melamed zchus on the neshama and was able to free it and was able to cure the guy. And so the Rebbe said, you see that you're melamed zchus even on such people who behaved completely inappropriately. After all, killing Zechariah, the Gemara mentions in various places, was one of the things that triggered the Churban Abayis. So, but there was a certain limit schus, after all, that you find even on such a person. People have said that the Rebbe was talking about that there was a dibuk that happened at that time that the Rebbe was helping. I don't know if that's correct. But, be that as it may, yeah, the first tikha over there on Vav Tishrei, the Rebbe was, yeah, where you can hear it. You can hear it.
See that video? It's clearly like the Rebbe is re-listening to the show.
No, that's on Simchas Torah, if anything. On Simchas Torah, when the Rebbe talked about the dibuk involving the Alter Rebbe, then maybe Yeshayim knew that there was that. The first one, Vav Tishrei, I don't know if necessarily, maybe, I don't know.
Are they speaking there also about Yerovam?
Yeah, about Yerovam.
Yeah.
Right. That was primarily in the Sikha of Simchas Torah, more than ever was talking about, that you ask how you can defend such people, aren't they? They've cut themselves off from the Jewish people, and yeah, they never said, Verop Geschnitt, Vosop Geschnitt, nobody's cutting themselves off, yeah. That's what we're talking about, yeah, with this fellow in that story with the Alter Rebbe, that neshama was one of the people who had killed Zechariah Hanovi, where the result of that was, yeah, that was an Adam killed hundreds of thousands of people, as the Gemara tells us in Gittin, yes. Yeah. Yeah. And still, they still accept the Wuzer Adam as a ger. That's true, but yeah. Yeah, anyway, let's continue, because we got to finish over here. The Yesh Omen Mishmarte Shoyalovoi, some say a different reason why the Mishmar of Bilga was penalized with these three things, because they were often late for the Avodah. So when it came their turn, they're supposed to start doing the Avodah on Shabbos. They wouldn't come, showing, Rashi says, that the Avodah was not that important to them. V'nichnas Yeshevav Achiv Imay V'shimesh Tachtav. So the result was that their fellow Mishmar of Yeshevav, which is the 14th Mishmar, the one before them, would have to take over, would have to fill in for them. They would be doing the Avodah when the Mishmar of Bilga hadn't shown up yet. Even though we usually find that the neighbors of Rishoyim don't gain, as the Gemara goes on to point out, usually Oyla Rosha, Oyla Shechene, in this case, Shechene Bilga Nistaklu. But Bilga's neighbor, which is the Mishmar of Yeshevav, they did gain. Because, like this, on a normal Shabbos, again, the outgoing Mishmar would have their Lechem upon him in the south of the Azara, and the incoming Mishmar in the north. Since Bilga is always having theirs in the south, therefore Yeshevov gets to have theirs in the north, both when they're coming in and when they're leaving, which shows a mile of theirs. Okay, so the Gemara asks, Bishlema Lamanda Omer Mishmar to Shoyalov. It's easy to understand, according to the opinion, that the Mishmar was late collectively. That explains why we're penalizing the whole Mishmara, because they showed that the Avodah is not precious to them. It's one woman, she did wrong, because of that we're going to penalize the entire Mishmara, or the Girsay and the printed Gemara Mishum Brata day, just because of the daughter, are we penalizing the father? And Mao Shah points out, we do have the concept, we know when a Bas Koyin and Zana, Esalviyah, he machalelis. Nevertheless, that's that we can say on him, Orush is a Yolad, Orush is a Gidol, cursed as a person who has such a daughter, but not to penalize him necessarily. And Mephoshim also point out, actually, you have Al Pi Alocha, for example, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. Even a Koyin, Rahman al Atlan, has a daughter who's Shmadzik or whatever, he's still allowed to Duchen. So what are we saying over here? We're penalizing the entire father, the father. And the answer is, Omar Abayin. Like people say, what a child speaks in the marketplace, it came either from his father or from his mother. So if Miriam could express herself in such a way, then it means she learned that way of expressing herself about the Mizbeach, not about the Avodah, from one of her parents. Well, we might ask them, fine, but are we going to penalize, why should we penalize the whole Mishmara because of one family in it? Amar Abaya, Oyla Rosha v'Oyla Shechene. Yeah, woe to the Rosha and woe to his neighbor. Rashi mentions, for example, you have a person has tzaras in their house, the stones that have the tzaras on them have to be removed, or even the whole house to be torn down, and that affects the neighbor as well. And vice versa, Tov l'tzadik, Tov l'shechene. And a tzadik has it good, and his neighbor also has it good. because mida tova meruba. Shenemar is, in fact, we have the pasuk says, Imru tzadik ki tov, say to the tzadik that he is good, ki frima alalei hem yechelu, because they will eat from the fruits, from the results of their deeds. So we see that even though we're talking the tzadik, loshen yochid, tzadik and tov, nevertheless, ma prima alalei hem yechelu, meaning that the shochen benefits from it as well. Hadron lach perak acholo, slikol masech the sukkah. Yom yom mashiach o go'ola, chof tres shvat. In the times in Yemosim Mashiach, the avoida of the Jewish people in being mevara tov from ra will be complete, and then we reach the shleimos that existed before the chet etzadas, just like before the chet etzadas. No avoida sabirurim was necessary, so it'll be then. Continuing on dinim of maftir, in principle, al pidin, the one who gets the maftu would really be the one saying after, and the tzibur should, and the tzibur would say after him quietly. Which, in fact, it says in Hayom Yom that is exactly what we do. People sometimes have the minhag that the tzibur says it out loud together with the maftir. That's really, people don't know better. Such a minhag should be nisbato, and nowadays, taka, we know, and people say it quietly with him. Sometimes people make a break after the haftarah, or during the brachas. So that's not right. If you say it out loud, then you're not going to be listening. Then you're not going to be listening to the master. And some other people might as well. And if you're saying it low, even at the beginning of the brachas, then you yourself are not listening. So no, once the master begins the haftarah, ends the haftarah, and begins the brachas, even if you yourself are still in the middle of reading the haftarah, wait. Pause over there till he finishes the brachas, and then continue saying the haftarah for yourself. So in other words, the idea is you should be saying it word for word with the chazan, but if you can't keep up, don't be saying it while he's saying the brachas. The maftir, for that matter, should be careful not to start the brachas until he hears that the voices in the background have ended.